Now, from the IAEA headquarters in Vienna, let's get the latest from our correspondent, Eva Manasieva, before we just start today's discussion.
The International Atomic Energy Agency has narrowly voted against an Arab-backed resolution that urged Israel to join the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. The motion was rejected by a margin of only 5 votes. 46 delegations voted in favor of the resolution and 51 against it.
There's no way to go backward. We might have up and downs, but this trend will not be stopped. I want to congratulate that over 100 countries of the IAEA membership did not surround to the pressure by United States and other Israeli allies.
Sudan's ambassador to the IAEA, Mahmoud Alamin, who presently chairs the Arab group, criticized the IAEA for its failure to address the issue of Israel under U.S. pressure and its, quote, obvious double standard.
The issue is still alive, and the issue will continue to be alive. I believe we haven't lost today. We have succeeded in telling the whole world about what's going on, in telling the world about the double standard of the Western group, especially concerning this matter.
This was the second resolution in 2 consecutive years introduced in a bid to persuade Tel Aviv to join the NPT and allow the UN Atomic Agency to inspect its nuclear facilities. The US and its allies, however, managed, through intense lobbying, to turn the vote in their favor, a result seen by some officials as a huge blow to the IAEA's credibility and image as an impartial international agency.
Let me say the political financing money bringing some countries from the countries, you know, developing countries, they were, even we did not used to see them in any of the conferences, now recently shown up in the conference and voted against.
Israel and the United States praised the rejection of the resolution. The issue is a serious cause for concern in the Middle East. Israel is widely believed to have hundreds of nuclear warheads. The U.S. and its allies have taken harsh measures against Iran over its nuclear program, although the IAEA has confirmed the non-diversion of Iran's nuclear activities. So the West's support of Israel's refusal to accede to the NPT, according to analysts, not only hurts the IAEA global image, but also raises serious questions about Washington's sincerity in its drive for peace and stability in the Middle East. Eva Manasieva, Press TV from the IAEA headquarters in Vienna.
So, to discuss the issue, we are joined by author and political scientist Carver Afriasiabi in New York, political activist Nada Hashmi in Beirut, and former US intelligence officer Bob Ayers on the phone from London. I'd like to thank you all for being with us. So, Ms. Hashmi, let me start with you. We just heard in that report some of the regional officials speaking about this. But at the end of the day, whichever way you look at it, this vote, this resolution was not passed through. Is this a diplomatic victory now for America and Israel?
Well, let me start by saying once again, the Americans and their allies proves to be which side they're on. And they're refusing to put Israel under the eye of the IAEA just because they know for a fact, and everybody else knows, that Israel have over 400 nuclear warheads. So once again, I don't consider that a succeed for American. No, actually for the Arab worlds, because like they said before in the report, there's pressure right now, and there's people who are listening. And don't forget that there's 46 countries, and two of them which are veto-wielding countries, that they approved this resolution. But unfortunately, again, most of the Western countries, and of course the American, stood behind that and stood behind beside Israel.
Dr. Afriasiabi, is this really a case that if we win, we win, and if we lose, we still win? I mean, last year they managed to get a resolution through. They have backtracked this year, haven't they? Why?
Well, the official explanation by the U.S. envoy at the IAEA is that there is an upcoming conference on the Middle East nuclear weapons-free zone, and that if resolution of this nature had passed, Israel would not participate. I really find that to be a very lame excuse, because it even conflicts with another aspect of the U.S. policy that has been reflected in President Obama's call for universal adoption of the NPT. And, you know, to veto a resolution that says, you know, a nation state that is known to have a very active nuclear program to join the NPT really speaks volumes about the hypocrisy and double standard of United States and other governments, particularly in the West, that vetoed it. However, I really think this is a very hollow victory. It's not meaningful, since it shows a growing trend in terms of the popular pressure in the international community on Israel, as well as the UN and the IAEA, to pressure Israel to join and to open up its nuclear facilities. So I agree with Dr. Soltanieh's assessment that the trend is in favor of that kind of eventuality.
Mr. Ayers, when it comes to the United States' handling of this in particular, I mean, Barack Obama's been very clear on what he thinks about the NPT. He's been pushing this conference. He's backed the 2012 conference. He thinks the NPT is something that needs to be moved forward with globally. How then do you assess these moves alongside that? Surely transparency with Israel and its nuclear arsenal would be the best way forward, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, I think you have to put in context what the resolution was attempting to achieve. First of all, it was a non-binding resolution. So even if there was a majority vote, there would be no requirement for anyone to comply with it. I think what we have to consider is the context behind this resolution. There's been a great deal of concern lately over the Iranian nuclear program and the secretive nature of it, and suddenly there's now a motion being made to put the spotlight, if you will, on Israel. So it seems to me that what we've got is fundamentally a political gesture. This is not a meaningful gesture. This is simply Middle East politics once again.
And Mr. Ayers, why does it have to be one or the other? If Iran is under IAEA inspection, does that mean that Israel should not be? Why can Israel not be under IAEA inspection as well?
Well, Iran ostensibly was under IAEA inspections, except for the fact that Iran concealed major nuclear facilities from the inspectors. So Iran was trying to delude or hide their nuclear program from the inspectors. I don't believe that constitutes being under IAEA inspection when you're hiding major parts of your nuclear program from the inspectors.
Okay, Dr. Afrasiabi, let's pick up on this point, because the conversations moved to Iran and quite quickly. Israel, which if this resolution would have passed through, symbolically at least, would have had to renounce nuclear weaponry. I mean, if it signed the NPT, that is. Israel's point of view here is that the Arab effort is politically motivated, a bid to divert attention to what it sees are the region's main threats. And of course, Iran and Syria are the names that they've put forward. So is this just all political?
Well, to some extent it is, but I think it also reflects the genuine concern that the Arab neighbors of Israel have with respect to Israel's piling up all these nuclear warheads. So to dismiss that as you know, non-relevant or merely political is a mistake, in my opinion. And let's not forget that there is a momentum building up that was reflected in the latest NPT review conference in New York that called for, you know, more vigorous attempts toward the nuclear weapons-free zone in the Middle East and Israel to, you know, step forward, etc. So, you know, it's not an isolated event, what I've transpired in the IAEA, but rather part of a chain of events that all point in the direction of the international community's interest in bringing Israel and its clandestine nuclear program into some sort of transparency.
That's not how Washington sees it, Ms. Hashwi. They call it, and I quote here, singling Israel out.
Singling Israel out from what?
Well, they're saying that in the IAEA, Arab states are singling Israel out. In essence, they're saying they're picking on Israel.
Again, you know, it's always like that. Everybody's picking on Israel. You know, Israel can do whatever they want. They can torture people. They can kill people. They can have nuclear warheads. They can, well, they want to become the police of the world. That's quite clearly, and everybody else are helping them. And unfortunately, the Arab world is not speaking clearly and widely enough to say stop to somebody like that. For example, like they can threaten Tehran and say that, well, you know, in the recent years, that is, we want to hit them, hit their nuclear factories just because they might have nuclear weapons. What about them? Well, don't we, let's say, for example, Iran is going to have this kind of weapons. Isn't it their right to have? What about them? They have it already. So in my opinion, I mean, no matter what Israel, for example, the ambassador Azouli, I believe, he's saying, oh, well, in their point of view, Iran and Syria are a threat to the peace of the Middle East.
To Mr. Ayers, can you not see that there is some form of double standard? That is what the Arab delegations in the IAEA are saying. They're saying, hold on a minute, fine, Iran seen as a threat by some countries. They're under inspection. Now, we can debate whether they're letting the inspectors in or not, but at the end of the day, they're under the NPT. Washington comes out and says, oh, well, Israel is not actually breaking any rules. Well, that's because it doesn't agree with the rules. It has not signed on to the NPT. So should there be more pressure from, for example, Washington to get Israel under that framework?
Well, I'm not sure what the ultimate objective is. If the objective is to validate that Israel has nuclear weapons, the general consensus of everyone that has been talking this evening is that Israel has nuclear weapons. So having an inspection regimen that comes in and says, well, yes, they have nuclear weapons, that accomplishes nothing. Is the ultimate objective disarmament of Israel? Or is the objective one of making a nuclear-free Mideast? What is the purpose behind all this is the question.
Well, I would come in here just and say, and we've spoken to Arab delegates of the IA before, they're saying, and we've spoken to regional experts before, they're just saying one rule for all.
That is my question. What is the objective of one rule for all? If the rule is that everyone that has nuclear weapons has to proclaim them, that's fine, but that doesn't do anything for resolving the tension and the conflict in the Middle East. All it does is call into attention the possibility of a nuclear war if the Middle East flames up again. So why are we trying to accomplish this? That's the fundamental question.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not debate on the issue of should Israel be under the NPT? Is Iran following the rules? The fundamental question is what is the purpose of the resolution?
Dr. Afsa, would you like to comment there and give your perspective? What is the point of all of this?
Well, it's self-evident that this is simply one step in a ladder that hopefully, idealistically speaking, will culminate in a nuclear weapons-free zone in the Middle East. Israel's admission of its possession of nuclear weapons will have a number of ramifications, one of which, you know, as we know, the NPT forbids nuclear sharing to countries that are proliferating nuclear weapons. So with respect to the nuclear supply group, for example, this will have ramifications and number of others. So to dismiss that and to say that it's not important and has no effect or implications is simply factually wrong, legally wrong. And anyone interested in, Middle East free of these weapons of mass destruction should pursue this track, because Israel is the only country in the region that has nuclear weapons and has been regarded as extra legal and as an exception to the rule.
What about the other point Mr. Ayers made?
That's the nature of the NPT.
What about the other point Mr. Ayers made, which is something that Washington has echoed, that actually coming out and declaring anything about Israel's nuclear weaponry right now would threaten peace? It will not help the progress towards any lasting peace in the region.
Well, I would have to take that with a great deal of grain of salt, because, first of all, the peace process is totally deadlocked. There have been a lot of, sitting downs and talks without any tangible results. And I myself am very pessimistic because of the nature of the Israeli government and its expansionist policies, oppressing the Palestinians with tacit blessing by Washington. So to use that excuse is simply to deflect attention from, the real issue, which is Israel's nuclear threat against its neighbors and in the larger, broader Middle East.
Okay, Dr. Afrasiabi, if I could just continue with you here. Let's talk about these negotiations, because Washington's, of course, said that if this discussion about Israel comes up, they won't turn up to the 2012 Egypt brokered conference. If they don't turn up there, it's going to put more pressure on these negotiations and they're just going to fall apart. The US is really pushing for a solution right now, but what if it even gets to a solution? If Mahmoud Abbas and the Israeli government come to some form of solution, will it be a solution that's accepted on the ground in the region by the Palestinian people, by the Israeli community? Is that something that one needs to consider at this point?
Well, certainly, if there is an agreement, and the Palestinians did ink an agreement in Oslo back in 1993 that basically came to nothing, because since then the Jewish settlements in the West Bank are more than triple or maybe quadrupled, despite the fact that Israel pledged back then to freeze all settlement activities. So, inking something on paper is one thing and implementing it in practice is quite another. And you have to add to that the fact that, there's, 1.5 million Palestinians in Gaza, and they've elected a government that is undesirable from the point of view of Washington and London, and they're not party to this peace process, and they need to be brought in, because Mr. Abbas does not represent all Palestinians. Nevertheless, if there is such an agreement, it would be a welcome step forward that hopefully could be linked to, the other issues that are outstanding on the Israel-Palestinian plate.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Hashri, we have you back now. Welcome back to the discussion. Let's talk about some of the regional players, and of course, Lebanon is one of them, and George Mitchell has been to Lebanon and has been trying to get it on board with this issue. But again, it comes to this conclusion. Israel's not being talked about in the IAEA. Israel's not being pushed to conform to NPT rules for this fact, that there is these negotiations going on and the United States is trying to get to a resolution within 12 months. But what about the public opinion on the street in the region? Can that opinion be turned around in 12 months?
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. First of all, I mean, if they're talking always about the peace and about the peace process and how they're going to achieve that. Mr. Sulaiman, the president of Lebanon, made it clear enough today in the UN that there will be no peace with Israel unless they return every single piece of our land back. And we're going to get it. If they don't return it, we're going to get it back in any means we can. So, and besides the point, if we want to go back to the nuclear weapons and all that, Lebanon feels threats as well, because Israel, you never know when they might think that they want to bomb Lebanon or Syria or Iran or anywhere in the Middle East. So again, I don't think any Arab country in the Middle East will agree that Israel will be the only threat, and it is actually the only threat to our nation.
Mr. Ayers, joining us from London on the phone. Of course, this 2012 conference about a Middle East free of nuclear weapons. Do you think Israel will come to the table at that meeting, at that conference? And at this point, how much of a frank discussion should there be between regional players? If there's not transparency and frankness and honest debate, can a realistic, a lasting solution be made?
Well, I think what we have to do is consider the position of Israel. Israel perceives that they are under threat of annihilation from some of their Arab neighbors. And Israel will never abandon an atomic weapons program as long as they perceive that their national survival is being threatened. So if we're going to discuss nuclear nonproliferation, that has to be tied very, very closely to a way of ensuring that the Israeli concerns for their national survival will be done away with. In other words, what guarantees will there be that if the Mideast is made into a non-proliferation nuclear-free zone, that Israel will not be assaulted by her neighbors and will be wiped out via conventional means?
Well, this comes to the crux of the matter, Mr. Dr. Afrasiabi, and we only have a few minutes, but the region says that they see Israel as a threat and that they can defend and will defend themselves. And in turn, Israel says, well, we're not going to talk about our nuclear weaponry then because we are threatened. So how does one go forward from this point? And how should global players like Washington be dealing with the situation?
It's a very complex question. I really think that it's naive to view Israel as, you know, a potential victim and using its nuclear might simply for defensive purposes. That overlooks the fact that Israel, first of all, has one of the, you know, most advanced armies in the world. I believe it's the fifth most powerful army in the world, has done pretty well against its Arab adversaries in the past, and this fear of being wiped out through conventional warfare by the Arabs simply doesn't calculate. Add to that the fact that, you know, Israel is not the only country that has national security concerns. The Arab states around that have legitimate concerns about Israel's nuclear superiority and Israel's ability occasionally to either explicitly or implicitly bully them by relying on its nuclear arsenals. So, you know, it's a mistake to simply prioritize one country's national interests and so forth and completely ignore the other side. And if there is to be a lasting solution, it has to take all these things into consideration in tandem.
Ms. Hashwi, I'd like to pass over final comments to you in just under a minute, if you can.
Yes, please. I'd like to make a comment on Mr. Ayers in London. He said that Israel will never let go of their nuclear weapons. Well, then they have to accept, whether it's Syria or Tehran or Lebanon, to be precise, with their resistance, if they want to fight back in any means they can to get back what they took in force, we are free to do so. Or else, I mean, if they don't get themselves right, they don't accept everybody else to do the right thing in their eyes.
Well, I'm sure the discussion could continue, but we're out of time. I'd like to thank all our guests, author and political scientist Carver Afrasiabi joining us in New York, Nada Hashwi giving us her comments just there in Beirut, political activist, and former US intelligence officer Bob Ayers on the phone from London. That's a wrap from us. Do stay tuned, though, for your headlines coming up in just a moment's time here on Press TV.